time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning and welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a lot of ground to cover, a lot going on. Valentine's is quickly approaching, and Tony brought in some lingerie he's going to be putting on. We'll get those pictures up on Facebook.
Where did that come from?
Good morning. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. And thanks for the introduction, by the way, too. I didn't know I was going to do a little runway action. That would be ugly. Thanks, Ernie.
Yeah, I like catching you off guard once
you
in a while.
Right, but there.
You know. We do have a lot to talk about today because as we mentioned last week, we have been on a roller coaster when it comes to weather. And how's that affecting your plants, your landscapes, your lawn? We'll cover that ground. Also, the importance. I love this topic line, too, you brought in. The language of flowers. Valentine's Day is quickly approaching.
You better know what you're doing.
Absolutely. You don't want to make any missteps, do you?
No. And a lot of guys do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we think she likes us and she doesn't. Mistake.
Yeah.
Kind of like you every time we're out.
Many years ago, but I remember overhearing somebody walk in. I can't remember exactly where it was, but this guy, and hopefully he was joking, but he walked up and said, I'd like to order some roses, but I want them to be non-committal, just kind of generic, some flowers. And the girl looked at him and said, you don't want flowers. You want a card. They're over in aisle 13. And he turned around and walked away.
Did you scare him?
I guess she did. I didn't.
What would non-committal be?
Like, that's what she was trying to make a point of. Is if you're going to send flowers, you've made a commitment to say something. Mm-hmm. You might as well say something nice.
Right.
You know.
Little friendship.
That's exactly right. So, how was your trip? Good?
I had a great time. And wonderful. What a game, too.
Yes, you know? It was.
The ending was incredible. So, obviously, that's one show, one game that will be hard to repeat.
It will. Yeah, I feel like the Bengals are off the hook. Every year at Super Bowl, they always show that catch in the end zone where we got beat and on a last-second play. And so, now I feel like they'll put that to rest, and we'll get a chance to move on.
Yeah, that makes you forget about that game, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Boy, that was, you know, was that back in the 80s?
81, and then 88, I think, was the stretch.
You know, think about that, too, just real quick, that Brady has won 5 Super Bowls. He's been, 7 or 8?
Uh-huh.
And in my lifetime, the Bengals have only been to 2.
First guy to win 5 was Charles Haley.
That's right. We talked about that the other day. Yeah, and I did not know that, by the way, but that was very astute of you to bring that up. Because you're a lineman, and he was a lineman.
He was a lineman, and you're right. And that's one of the things that
we forget about those guys.
Well, it is. That's where football games are won and lost, on the offensive defensive line. And he was an outside linebacker at times, too. But that's kind of where I watch the game, you know. And I would love to see them at some point, other than when somebody misses a tackle, show a little bit more of that action on the line. That's where the good stuff is.
You know, everybody likes the quarterback.
Yeah.
Quarterback's always the leader of the team. You know, the wide receivers, the defensive ends, or the defensive backs.
The money men.
The money men. The money men.
So we get this roller coaster weather.
Yes, we do.
Unbelievable.
And I was just trying to get a little view of what the forecast is, because the forecast for the upcoming week is warm. It's mild.
Yeah,
and this is crazy. This is typically not what we see this time of year.
Have you been seeing anything poke up through the ground that you are kind
of absolutely
surprised by?
A lot of the fall bulbs that were planted, even those that have been in the ground for a couple of years. And keep this in mind. Let Mother Nature allow her to do her thing. Do not do anything heroic. Do not put more mulch over those bulb tips as they're starting to make their way through the surface.
Right.
Worst thing you can do. You know, it's going to promote it and make them come along even faster.
Mm-hmm.
So just allow things to stay the way they're going to, you know, come about, and you'll be fine. But what's really concerning, too, is a couple of things. And next week, David Kester from the Boone County Extension will be in with us to talk in particular about fruit trees. And what we're going to start seeing are some of the early bloomers, you know, starting to, those buds starting to swell, like on the peach trees, the magnolias and so forth.
Right.
What we're faced with in this particular situation, Ernie, is that, you know, as these buds start to swell, you know, they're getting a false sense of a false sense of like, hey, it's spring, we're ready to go. And all of a sudden, we dip down into some really cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be the demise of some of those bloom buds. It could be. So those are the real concerns right there.
Sure.
And we certainly hate to lose that spring blooming show.
I hate it when we have that big, beautiful magnolia tree in our front yard.
Absolutely.
And when it blooms, it's gorgeous. It's
right.
Wonderfully fragrant. And then when it freezes, it just turns to ugly little knots.
Quickly. You know, you don't get that longevity out of it. And it's all about the weather.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of other concerns, too, that I have along with this. And that is one of those. If you remember a few years ago, we had that real, you know, we had a string of mild winters.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the winter annual weeds that made themselves present in our lawns or in our landscape beds just went crazy, went wild. And a lot of things started germinating sooner in our landscape beds. So with that, you know, having said that, you know, we need to take into consideration, do we need to, like, start some of our prepping for the upcoming season a little sooner? And that very well may be the case. And when I say that, I'm talking about using some of our pre-emergent products to keep weed seed from germinating in our landscape beds.
And, you know, and it's not just us. I saw a friend of mine post a picture from over in Scotland, and the caption of the photo was a dusting of snow and crocuses already poking up. So when we come back, we're going to continue a conversation about the yo-yo weather, how it's going to be affecting your plants, your landscape, and how to effectively treat it, and maybe some things that you might be considering that might not be a great idea. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Here's what to look forward to weather-wise, and we were talking about this before the break. Going to see some rain today, warmer temperatures, high right around 60, and then more rain tomorrow. Back up to 60 as well, and then settling into the 50s for the most part, upper 40s for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So it has just been another one of those crazy, crazy winters.
You know, and don't get me wrong, I like the temperatures where they are. But we all know too well that in our area, most of the time we're accustomed to seeing cold weather, especially in February.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like that little blanket of snow we had the other day. That's perfect.
I love
that. You know, where the top of the ground still kind of crusty and frozen, and a little bit of snow, and acts as an insulator, a little bit of a blanket, a little bit of some protection. And before that, this is interesting, and I told you this the other day, I can't believe that I'm seeing a little bit of mole activity in my yard in February.
Oh, you said the M word.
I know. I tried to catch that bad Oscar the other day. I set my trap out there, and I'm thinking, you know, you're killing me, dude. Where did you come from? I've not had mole issues in years until this past season. I captured two. And I didn't release those guys either. I captured two back in the backyard earlier, late last summer, fall, remember?
Are they in the compost bin?
Trash. they're at Rumpke Mountain.
Mole relocation program.
How is that?
Yeah.
But can you believe? It's just incredible.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just don't know what to make of it.
It's amazing. You know, and if they're moving already, that leads me to think that other, like grubs and stuff, are starting to shuffle around. And it's just so bizarre.
Well, there shouldn't be that. Well, I don't know what they're looking for. Usually they're a little deeper, but it's just crazy to say the least. And actually, when I came home, well, the snow buried my trap.
Oh, did it?
A little bit. Right in the turf.
Yeah.
And I came home the other day, and it was up, and I'm like, yes. You know, it sprung.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, baby, got him. I think I got him. So I go there, and I look at the trap, and I kind of wiggle it back and forth, and he's not underneath there.
Oh, no.
So what do? I tell myself, there was no activity. It was just the ground, the temperature changing as the ground was freezing and thawing, and it just released the trap.
Some size.
To my wishful thinking. But, I don't know. It's crazy. And while we're talking about the weather and some things that we can do, take advantage of it while it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's start cutting back some of our ornamental grasses. If Mother Nature's going to allow us to get out there and do a little bit of that stuff, let's do it. You know, cut back your grasses, cut them back to about 3 inches, 4 inches above the ground, and start disposing of that stuff. If you have a compost pile, take it to the compost heap. And when we do that, the beauty of that is that we're sending less yard debris to the landfills.
So let's
recycle some of those things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, if there's still a little bit of leaf debris and other items are blown down like small limbs, you know, it's been rather windy.
Mm-hmm.
I know I have a lot of birch stems in the yard. Pick some of those things up. Take advantage of the weather. And most importantly, too, it's that time of the year to dormant seed. I know we've been talking about it. Just keep in mind if your turf or as you're walking out on the lawn, if it's really moist and mushy, just refrain from sowing seed if you need to do that. Back off and just wait a few days and take advantage of this weather. It's the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we dormant seed, usually we think about dormant seeding our lawn anywhere from November through February going into March. And I think this, and I will argue this tooth and nail, February, mid, the latter part of February is the best time to winter seed.
And the weather has been beautiful for it.
Well, it's not, you go out the day without a coat, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Just have at it, you know. Take advantage of the weather. So if it's going to allow us to get out there and do some of those things, you're just going to get a head start on the season.
749-V105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy. Several ways to stay connected with us. You can email us at inandaroundthehouse@V105.com. And certainly jump onto our Facebook page. Tony's added a couple of pictures, and we've had a few Facebook questions posted. We're going to get to those in just a few minutes. And also, we stopped down and visited our new friend, Molly Wellman, down at Japs, and she's going to be joining us about 8 o'clock or so, because Valentine's Day is coming up, and if you want to do something really special, Molly's going to give you some ideas on how to whip up some great specialty beverages.
I love potion drink.
Very well. Number nine. and also a couple of great ideas about hosting parties, because we've talked about this quite a bit, where everyone has worked very hard to create the living spaces. In the summertime and spring, you have all those outdoor living spaces, and you want to host friends and have them come over. Molly's written a couple of books, which are just absolutely fascinating. Can't wait for her to get here. We're going to have some fun with handcrafted cocktails. And then we're going to talk, too, a little bit about the language of flowers. But when we come back, we're going to talk about pre-emergence. And is it too soon? And we'll discuss that. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking about winter seeding and dormant seeding. And I've noticed several things popping up through the lawn that have given me a little bit of concern. And Tony was just talking about this is the perfect time to seed, but what's the scheduling for maybe getting down any pre-emergence? Should you wait on that or what?
Boy, I tell you what. Typically, we don't even start thinking about a pre-emergent. And when I'm talking about the pre-emergent, I'm not really talking about the lawn quite yet.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of leaning towards the landscape beds. And the reason being is because, you know, we're seeing warmer temperatures, above normal temperatures. This might be an indicator that we might jumpstart into spring rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've seen this happen before in years past. And think about it, Ernie. We're only a couple weeks away from March.
Yes.
And we know what kind of weather we can have in March. It can be really cold or it can be beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And It all has to do with temperature and that grounds, you know, the soil temperature starting to rise a little bit, just enough for some weed seed to start germinating. And we may see a little bit of early germination from a weed standpoint or some unwanted things in the landscape.
Right.
Maybe our lawns too, but I wouldn't quite worry about that, you know, too much yet. But the landscape beds have a tendency to warm up quicker because there's just mulch in it. You know, in the lawn, you know, you have your turf, so the soil temperatures are still cooler.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, at the surface. But, you know, we may want to start thinking about using high yields turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper that has Dimension in it. I like Dimension because it's better than Preen. Both products are good products, don't get me wrong. But you get a little bit more longevity from Dimension than you do Preen.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind. You know, if we get some decent weather, you have some Dimension, you know, in a garage or in the shed, go ahead and apply it. It's not going to hurt. We're going to get more benefit than nothing at all. The thing of it is, you know, a little bit of moisture this time of year, we may not get the longevity out of it because it starts activating sooner.
Okay.
But think about it. You may get on the weed germination sooner. So it's hard to say at this point in time, but the way that the Owsleep forecast looks and the way the winter has progressed, we've been above, you know, normal temperatures big time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and, you know, pick up your pre-emergent for the landscape beds. And even when you're out, pick up that Fertilume three-step program. That's a little early yet, but it's not far. It's just around the corner. So just have all this stuff on hand. Have it in the garage. Have it in your shed. And it'll be there. It'll be ready for you to do it when the time comes. It's being prepared.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting ready to say. If you have it already, and then one of those days comes up where you mm-hmm. can do it, save yourself a lot of time by already having it on in the house.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, as we talk about getting ready for the upcoming season, take advantage of the weather. Like I said a moment ago, you know, I might be inclined to start pruning back, cutting back my ornamental grasses. You know, it won't be long until we start talking about our rose bushes, you know.
Yeah.
Comes time to start pruning those back as well, with the exception of the climbers. So if for some of these things that you did not get to in the fall, certainly take advantage of the weather and get to them now.
And what about fruit trees, like pears and apples? And
you know what? We're getting close to the time when the weather's nice. You can start pruning those. And we're going to really get into that heavy next week with David Kester when he joins us from the Boone County Extension.
Good idea.
But and also we're going to talk about the vulnerability.
Oh, this is good.
Say that. Vulnerable ability or whatever. Really? Whatever happens to
vulnerability.
Thank you. I can't spit that out.
That's funny. And I don't mean to laugh, but yeah, I do.
Peach trees, you know, as those buds start to swell, what could happen to those if we drop into a deep freeze, mm-hmm. you know, some really cold temperatures?
So
not good.
What happens if this, and I guess we just won't see any fruit if we have one of those things where the blooms jump out a little early, then we get another freeze mm-hmm. and that kills the bloom. There'll
it's
be
just
no
less,
fruit.
Less fruit production. Okay. And that's just what Mother Nature gives us.
Now, didn't you cover one of your trees?
Oh, gosh.
At one time or another?
I did.
And did it work? Or
I think that I probably ended up doing more damage. You have a good memory, by the way.
Well, I just was thinking about that when you were talking about the trees, and I thought,
well,
maybe if there's I can remember my mom used to take old 5-gallon buckets out and on mm-hmm. occasions would mm-hmm. cover over some plants when mm-hmm. there was going to be a frost or a freeze. Mm-hmm. And that made me think that if there are some blooming plants or trees, then we want to cover them.
The point that you're making is when you put a bucket over a plant and it's not touching the plant, it does protect it. But a lot of times if you just put plastic over a plant, it's still with the plant touching the plastic, it could still freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really getting anything. You're not gaining anything.
I got you.
Okay. But it's funny that you said that because years ago, as the as Japanese maples were coming onto the scene and becoming more popular in the home landscape, it was always thought that, boy, as they start to leaf out and you went into a cold spell, that it would damage the foliage and they would never leaf back out again. So that's what was always said and thought, and which was the furthest from the truth, because if you have a healthy Japanese maple tree, it will send out secondary leaves.
Okay.
That happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my Japanese maple tree has been there for over 20 years. So it looks great today. But I was trying, doing the heroic thing. I was trying to protect it.
Sure.
And it was the, well, who knows? But you don't need to do that. Don't go there. Just let Mother Nature do her thing. But I made this big, like, wooden box kite-looking thing around it, and stapled plastic to it, and all that yada, yada, yada good stuff. And it just, it wasn't even necessary.
That's funny. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking a little bit about seeding, dormant seeding, but is overseeding the proper time now, or is now the proper time for overseeding? We'll talk about that when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground already this morning. We have Molly Wellman, local author and nightclub, restaurant, bar owner. And she's going to help us get ready with some very special drinks for the Valentine's season or Valentine's Day, Valentine's weekend. And any other social gatherings you may be having at your house. You had a good time the other night.
I had a wonderful time. I really did.
Yeah.
And it was so enjoyable to see somebody who really enjoys their job, their work.
Sure.
And she does. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And Japs was just filled with, I mean, as people were walking in, you know, they're happy, they're jovial, and she's like, hey, how are you? Would always look up and acknowledge everybody that walked into the door and be right with you, and yep. She's mixing up drinks as she's talking to the patrons as they were coming into the bar area, and it was really a fun time. I could have just sat there for another couple of hours and watched her at work. That's what it was. She was at work. The whole mixology of putting things together was so intriguing to me. I can't wait till she joins us at the 8 o'clock hour. Yeah. And we'll get more into that at that point in time. And we'll also talk about the book, you know, The Handcrafted Cocktails. That's a great book. And someone had given that to me for Christmas. So hang out with us.
We were earlier talking about dormant seeding. And a lot of the questions we get, especially this time of the year, is thinking about overseeding. Those are not the two same things.
So. Yeah, they are. Well, it can be. It's dormant seeding, winter seeding. And actually, the whole chronological order of reseeding our lawn, be it if we're repairing it or if it's a new lawn, et cetera, the chronological order is this. Fall is the ideal time. The second best time is in the winter now.
Okay.
Third best time is in the spring, and the least desirable time, not that you can't do it, is summer. So it's in that order, because it's hot in the summer.
Sure,
it's a lack of moisture in summer.
Yeah, okay.
Just to help you with that look you gave me.
No.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like that.
I was just thinking, well, why wouldn't you want to seed in the summer, and then you...
Well, it's the least desirable, but if you have to, you have to.
Okay, gotcha.
But when it comes to dormant seeding our lawn... I look at it like this. There are three things that you really need to know. The first being, what type of turf, what type of lawn do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when I say that, I'm always talking about, you know, the type of grass, you know. And in our area, we have cool season grasses. And, you know, if you notice in the spring and in the fall, that's when our lawns are at their best. They perform better in cooler temperatures. So we have cooler season grasses. Or lawns, and I like tall fescues. It could be Jaguar. It could be, you know, Fine Lawn Elite that we talk about all the time that I've had great success with.
Mm-hmm.
And even the new Fine Lawn H2O that we've talked about, we may touch on a little bit later in the show. So a tall fescue is where you want to head, where you want to go. That's what you want in your lawn. Now, our good friend Turpin at Turpin Farms, he likes fescues, don't get me wrong, but he also likes bluegrass too, you know, and hopefully we'll have him in sometime the course, you know, during the course of this season, and we'll get into that discussion. But, determine the type of turf that you want in your lawn and try to match up what you already have in your lawn as best you can. It's very difficult to identify certain species of grass, et cetera, et cetera. It takes a very trained eye in looking underneath the microscope, you know, at some of the auricles and the ligules and all that other good stuff. But knowing what type of seed, what type of turf you want is really important. If you're on a slope and you're sowing grass seed, I always encourage people to add a little bit of a perennial rye to it, because usually that's one of the first of this of the turfs to germinate, and it gets up and it helps keep the seed in place. All right, so we need to know that first. Secondly, timing. You know, if you want to be a great baseball hitter, you got to have good timing. If you want to sow grass seed and have success with it, it's timing. And again, it's in the fall and it's winter seeding. And this time of year, when we talk about winter seeding, I think February is the best time to do it, bar none. So It's timing. So now we're right there. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up your grass seed, everything that you need.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about the turf, what you want in your lawn, the timing. Last but not least, but it's one of the most important things that you need to determine as well. We were talking about pre-emergence. We were talking about, briefly, the Fertilum three-step program and putting down that first step. That first step, guess what? It's a pre-emergent.
Chicken butt.
And it keeps weed seed and it keeps grass seed from germinating. Okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we need to determine what's most important, keeping weed seed out, crabgrass out, or getting our lawn and that newly sown grass seed to get it, you know, come along and get established.
Sort of a double-edged blade there, isn't it?
Yes, you know? It is. So we need to determine what are we going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if your backyard needs to have a little bit of work done to it, you need to sow seed in the backyard, and the front is okay, then put down your first step in the front lawn, forego it in the back, and get the seed started. If you don't have a lawn, there's no sense in you going through all these other steps to try and keep a lawn.
Agreed.
You got to have a lawn first. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really important. Take heed to this. Those of you who have a lawn care service, you need to contact them, because more than likely they are not going to call you. You need to contact them and say, hey, when are you planning or what are you thinking about early spring? Are you applying a pre-emergent? And ask, what is the product that they're using?
Yeah, very important.
How long will that product last? What's its effectiveness? Because you may go out and do all this work this weekend or next weekend and sow grass seed. Then they come and put that pre-emergent on your lawn and put the old sticker out there, unbeknownst to you. And guess what? Your seed is not likely going to germinate.
Yeah.
And you're going to think that the seed that you bought at the garden center or nursery is bad. That's the furthest from the truth. It's because we weren't in sync with one another.
Exactly.
Okay. So I wish that more lawn companies would take the courtesy to call their customer and ask them, do you have any intentions on overseeding, you know, this winter? So we know what we need to do when we come. So that's very, very important.
Very good. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Valentine's Day is just 3 days away. When we come back, we're going to cover ground about Valentine's Day and how important it is for you to not misstep. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Sarah on the line. Tough situation for her. Good morning, Sarah. She has dogs, or a dog, that goes outside and uses the same spot.
Ooh.
Dog's yes. Not the dog's name isn't Spot, right?
You're all right.
It's an old joke. So, how big of a dog do you have?
It's a large dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a golden doodle.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I'm taking that it goes out and urinates in the same area, and that's what's killing it, or Jeff
yeah,
uses the
urinates just in the same spot.
Okay.
Yeah, Sarah, you're faced with a really tough situation, and really the best effectiveness or the best thing you can do for those urine spots is to flush them, you know, thoroughly through with water. And this time of year, obviously, you're not going out there to do anything of the sort. So, you know, and there's also, I've heard people talk about some home remedies. We had one caller a couple years ago said that he adds tomato juice to his dog's food or diet, and that helps the acidic part of the urine, the pH level in the urine. If that works, truly, I'm not sure. Also, I understand that there's medications or things you can give your dog to balance that out. And I really wouldn't advise that because I really don't know if there's any long-term ill effects for a pet using things like that. You might want to get with your veterinarian and see. But from this, really, it's a tough one to combat.
Yeah. And I know just it's going to be a little tedious, but Tony's right. The best thing you could do is when you let your dog out, get a little, like a bucket of water that you would water your plants with. And then after the dog goes out and does its business, just take and empty the bucket of water right on that spot. Because we want to flush that out of the topsoil.
Yeah, it's diluting the pH level or the pH of the urine. It's a tough one. Does your dog have free run of the yard? Is your dog on a leash, or is there an invisible fence? Are there any of those things that you can change up to change the pattern of the dog's habit?
He basically has free reign. He can go wherever he wants in the front yard. That's just where he picks.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a lot of times, you know, what's really interesting about, especially the male dogs, is that they want to trump one another. So where one has already urinated, another one comes along and says, hey, I'm going to mark my territory. So it's always a continual thing. And just by habit, you know, over time, that makes it really difficult to grow grass. It can really make it difficult to grow turf. Also, it can injure or damage plants in the landscape. But it's one of those things, you know, we all love our pets, and it's one of those things we got to sacrifice one to appeal and keep the other. But the best thing you can do is just flush those areas with water to dilute that and break it down.
Okay.
Check with your veterinarian and see what they have to say. That's another thing. But again, I'm not well versed with those kind of items or medications that the pets can take to reduce that pH level in the urine.
But let us know how it works out, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, that's really interesting, too. Yeah. I would be very interesting to hear what other people have done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things we don't think a lot about. I for one, I don't have pets, so I'm not really thinking about that all the time.
Sure. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And previously we were talking about overseeding, dormant seeding, and there were a couple of other things we wanted to touch on. Before we move to Valentine's Day, and there was a couple of things you wanted to share.
Well, the other thing when we're talking about sowing seed that I wanted to touch base on, there's one thing that you can do when you're dormant seeding and you want to keep crabgrass out of your lawn and you also want your grass seed to germinate. There's a product out there made by Greenview and maybe some other companies as well that will allow you to have your cake and eat it too. And when I say that, it means just this. You can sow your grass seed, put the product down, no worries. Your grass seed's going to germinate, but this particular product can distinguish between grass seed and crabgrass seed. And it works well. I've used it before. And the actual ingredient that you want to look for in this particular product is either Tupersan or Siduron. So you can have your cake and eat it too and do both with no worries, but it will take a couple more dollars out of your wallet to do this. But if that's important to you, it's well worth it. So Greenview makes this product. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and ask for this product. If, in fact, you want to have your cake and eat it too, sow grass seed and also be able to keep out crabgrass.
I always want to have my cake.
I know you do.
And eat it too.
All
ice cream in there.
I've seen you do it.
Don't forget Valentine's Day. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the importance of Valentine's Day and some misconceptions, too, about Valentine's Day. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And a lot of people are thinking about Valentine's Day coming up in 3 days. And Tony and I have discussed this for many years now. Ladies, always love getting flowers, especially if they're at work. Don't miss that opportunity to put a smile on their face. But also be careful about any other gifts that you may think would be great.
That's right. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah. Send them to their place of employment. And don't just do it. Do it when it's Valentine's Day or their birthday. Do it just because.
Sure.
And that means you took the extra step to think about them on that particular day. And boy, they will glow like nobody's business.
Sure.
I see it all the time. If I'm delivering and helping out and you go into the office environment, and who are the flowers for?
You know, I read a couple of interesting articles over the last week that if you're going to take your significant other out for a very special Valentine's Day, and you're thinking that it might lead to something romantic after the date.
Oh, yeah.
Very first rule is do not answer your cell phone or a text when you're out on the date. If you're at dinner, there were 1,500 women that responded to this survey. And the overwhelming response was they make that decision whether there'll be any voteo dough as soon as someone's distracted by a cell phone or a text.
I don't know. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
At restaurants, you'll see couples, they don't even converse. They just, you know, they're just sitting there, they're chowing, or they're looking at their phone, and it's like, why did you two even go out?
And the other one that cracked me up, too, was that less than 3% of them want lingerie. So don't go out thinking,
we want lingerie. Yeah, they don't. We want it. We want it.
Well, the best thing to do, according to this study, was said, let us go get it, pick it out. Their fear is that you're going to get something that they're not going to fit into. That's going to make them feel embarrassed, or they're going to think that since you gave it to them, they're going to have to go put it on right away, and it might be one of those.
That's all you want.
Imagine that. Yeah.
I'll let that one go. If you brought that up, I'll leave that with you. How's that?
Right. But whatever you do, pay special attention.
Yeah, and it's all about the rose.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the rose, especially this time of year. More roses are sold this time of year than any other time throughout the course of the season.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. And that's what, you know, supply and demand, and, you know, that's what makes the rose a little bit more expensive this time of year. But, hey, isn't she worth it? That's what you have to say to yourself. What we will do when we first meet somebody, and then all of a sudden all that wears off, Ernie, and we forget to send these flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Say it with flowers, because there's a lot of meaning behind it when you say it with flowers, especially the rose. And that's the significance of it. You know, roses are rich in history and a lot of meaning behind the colors. And along with that, you know, they've been used for hundreds of years to convey messages to the other person. You can say
like
a lot.
Secret messages.
That's right.
Coded messages.
It's a coded message. We can say a lot to a person without really even verbally saying a word.
Mm-hmm.
And roses symbolize confidentiality. And there's a Latin expression, which is really cool, called sub rosa, meaning under the rose, which also means something told in secret.
Sub rosa.
Sub rosa.
Nice.
Under the rose. Something told in secret.
I like that.
So I think that's why roses are most sought after this time of year.
Sure.
You know, you want to say something.
Now, what about the amount of, is single rose mean anything different than a half a dozen or a dozen? Or
I'm sure there's something there that comes along the line that will say that. A single rose, you know, just a red rose, it says, I love you. That's the common thread, the common meaning, the common symbolic or symbolism behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really interesting, too, is yellow. Do you know anything about the yellow rose?
Of Texas?
Of Texas.
Is that the friendship rose?
It is. Uh-huh. Friendship, joy, caring. But back in Victorian times, if you sent someone a yellow rose or handed somebody a yellow rose or a group of yellow roses, a bunch of yellow roses, a bouquet, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, it meant jealousy.
Oh, really?
But today, if there's somebody that you kind of admire and you just kind of, you want to keep it on a friendship kind of connotation, a yellow rose is appropriate.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, so that You were talking about the one guy that you kind of scared off and sent him to the card aisle.
No, I just happened to be standing there. Mm-hmm. It was the girl behind the counter and said, you don't want flowers, buddy. You want to go to the card section and send a nice note. His thing was, I want to send some flowers, but I don't want him to say anything.
Well, just send the stems. Take the whole bud off. What the heck? You know?
Do the Morticia Adams.
There you go.
Yeah.
But we all know that red symbolizes love and passion and stuff like that. And going back to the yellow, mm-hmm. you know, that's joy, that's friendship. So be careful with what you're doing. Any ideas you want to take a stab at what pink symbolizes?
Boy, I'm only guessing here. Passion?
Nope. Blow him up, Johnny.
No.
Elegance, refinement.
Yeah.
Femininity. So, gentility, stuff like that. So, it's you're a little on the safe side there, I think, with pink.
Okay.
All right. It could also convey or mean gratitude. So, before you go to red, we're trying to tell you about some other colors.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
We're trying to help you guys.
If it's a new relationship, you start with something that says, hey, you're special to me.
Right. And, you know, the lighter pales of pink or shades of pink
mm-hmm.
Can also mean grace, admiration, happiness. So keep that in mind, guys,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Before, if you just met her yesterday or a couple of days ago, don't send red.
That's yeah.
Don't even go there.
That's the stalker alert.
That's the stalker alert. Yes. A little red light goes off, and it's like, yeah. This dude is like, I'm not going to be able to shake him.
The creepy factor.
Right. You know, what about orange?
Bengals fan. You're a Bengals fan. I'm a Bengals fan.
I know you are because I brought back a ticket for you.
That's right.
That's right. But it's not. It has nothing to do with the Bengals. It
no.
could, but
yeah.
it doesn't. Any idea?
Tennessee. No. I'm from Tennessee. No. Trust.
Attraction. You're attracted. Admiration.
Well,
but you're attracted.
Yeah.
So, you know, orange might be safe. Just yeah. saying, hey, I'm attracted to you. Yeah. I've had a good time. Just what little time we've known one another.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the color rose you want to send.
How many colors are available?
Lots.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't even want to go there. There's so many different roses out there. They all have different shades of various colors.
Mm-hmm.
Similar colors.
I know you and I are pretty close in age. There was a day back in the 70s where every flower seemed to have to be tipped in something, you know, like blue tipped in white or white tipped in blue or red, depending on
they
what
still do that.
Colors. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
People will still do that. You know, there's also, we'll have people ask for blue roses, and really those are white roses that will take up a blue dye.
Oh.
And, you know, people are in Kentucky like that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But what about lavender? Lavender, purplish color, roses.
Let me see. I guess.
See, I didn't give you this list. So I'm quizzing you.
Yeah.
So
and I'm doing miserable.
Well, you're like 0 for 3. You're 0 for 3. You haven't scored yet.
Lavender?
Yeah.
Will mean that I did something wrong and I'm sorry.
No. Mystique. Mystique. There's something mystique.
Well, it's usually a mystery to me when I've done something
enchantment.
Wrong and I don't know about.
Desire. But you better proceed with a little caution.
Oh.
When you send lavender purple roses, you know, there's a little more meaning there than
okay.
than meets the eye.
I don't know for four.
Yeah. But the language of flowers is really, really an interesting thing. And if you really dig into it, you will find out so many interesting things about the language of flowers. You know, I was telling you early in the show, take the United Kingdom, their coat of arms,
uh-huh.
okay? On their coat of arms, there's three things. The thistle, the Tudor rose, and the shamrock. So, you know, the meaning and the symbolic, the symbolism behind flowers is so incredible. We don't really put a lot of thought into it, unfortunately.
Okay. Right, right.
But the United Kingdom coat of arms, the thistle represents Scotland
mm-hmm.
and austerity. The Tudor Rose represents England, the unity of Royal York and Royal Lancaster, and the Shamrock represents Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Irish Heritage and Rebellion. So that's really interesting how that all comes into play.
Sure is. Yeah, I never really gave that much thought. But the coat of arms, when you see it, you don't really look at much of the detail. But now I'm going to have to look one up right here in a minute when we get into breaking.
And, you know, the chrysanthemum.
Yeah.
All right, this is really interesting, too. In Japan, the chrysanthemum, the mom, is both the imperial emblem and the national emblem. Meaning, it has a meaning, the power to prolong life. The chrysanthemum. So interesting. I think this stuff is so interesting. The peony, you know, everyone loves the peony.
Mm-hmm.
And it represents a happy life, happy marriage. So a lot of girls, when they get married, the bouquets, they like the peonies. So there's a lot of symbolic element behind flowers and what they mean. And the one that's the most interesting to me is Kate Middleton's wedding bouquet.
Why is that so interesting?
Because, you know, there's everything that made up this particular bouquet, it had a meaning to it. So in her bouquet, there was myrtle, lily of the valley, the white hyacinth, and sweet William. And in this bouquet, and this is why, you know, a lot of this comes from, you know, our friends across the pond. You know, this isn't something I've made up. It's been around for a long, long time. But the myrtle represents hope and love.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting. The myrtle that was used in her bouquet was taken from a sprig from the Queen's wedding in 1947 when she was still Princess Elizabeth.
Wow. Okay.
So that is so cool. The lily of the valley that was in the bouquet, it symbolizes trustworthiness. All right.
Very good.
The white hyacinth symbolizes constancy, and sweet William symbolizes gallantry and the groom, Prince William. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
What do you think?
I just kind of thought,
you're like overwhelmed, aren't you?
I am. But I didn't watch the wedding, but now I wish I had.
Now, what was really interesting, too, when the wedding took place at Westminster Abbey, when Kate Middleton and Prince William married, in Westminster Abbey, in the church, they had 6 maple trees, 2 hornbeams, euphorbia, they had lilacs, Solomon seal, which is one of my favorite perennials. They had rhododendrons, and of all things, wisteria.
Wisteria.
That's the most interesting thing, the most interesting plant that they had in Westminster Abbey when they got married.
And what is the wisteria?
I'm not going to tell you that last because that's the funniest part here.
Well, hold that thought.
Okay.
Tell me that
we're going to talk about what every one of these symbolize when we come back out of the break.
Okay. 749. B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been getting you ready for Valentine's Day. And Tony has been testing me or quizzing me about the colors and the significance of the colors. And I've been failing miserably.
The language of flowers. And before we went into the break, we were talking about Kate Middleton's and Prince William's wedding, her bouquet. But their wedding at Westminster Abbey. And it was really interesting. I mean, that was an all-out ordeal, and that was some time ago. But the English seem to put a lot of emphasis on the meaning of flowers, more so than we do.
Yeah.
But very interesting, to say the least. But at Westminster Abbey, where we were talking before we went into the break, that they had maple trees in the church, hornbeam trees in the church, euphorbia, which is a perennial plant.
I was going to ask you what euphorbia was.
Solomon seal, another perennial plant, rhododendrons, and wisteria, which we'll get to last, which is really interesting. But the 6 maple trees, they symbolized humility and reserve. That's what the maple trees were there for.
Okay.
The hornbeams. What's interesting about the hornbeam is it's a very, very hard wood. Okay? So it represented resilience, and it's a hard wood. It's impossible to damage.
Oh, nice.
So it had that connotation about their relationship. Really?
Yeah.
You liking this now or what? Okay.
Yeah.
Euphorbia, which is a plant. There's a lot of different cultivars of it, but it symbolized persistence. And it symbolized Kate's 8-year wait for Prince William to ask her to marry him.
Hmm.
So I thought that was very interesting.
Sure, sure.
And the lilacs, where did the lilacs come into play here? But they symbolized her first love and the youthful innocence. So I thought
how
that was
appropriate.
Very, and Solomon's seal, Polygonatum, one of my favorite shade perennials, represented the confirmation of love. And the rhododendrons symbolized caution. She is well aware of, Kate Middleton, of the potential difficulties of royal life.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how do you like that? So she put a lot of thought into this.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Last but not least, and the most interesting, wisteria. Why was wisteria there? Well, this is for fun. Kate Middleton had wisteria there to poke fun at the public.
Okay.
Because Kate and her sister, Pippa, they were known as the Wisteria Sisters.
Why?
Because of their ability, their ferociousness, their ability to climb the social ladder.
Hmm. Always helps when you're drop-dead gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. And you marry into royalty and money. But
that's a leg up right there.
They were known as the Wisteria Sisters. Uh-huh. And I thought that was very interesting.
Very cool. Very, great stuff. The royal weddings are always fascinating because mm-hmm. there is so much of that drama and heritage and all of that. It was kind of neat.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, something else that's really interesting, too, one of my favorite perennials is the poppy. You know, the poppy plant itself is symbolic of remembrance. And I was telling you about the battle that took place over in Belgium mm-hmm. in Flanders Field,
okay.
which if I can yep. get you to read that poem that was written by John McCrae, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And what happened here at this battle, all this skirmish went on, and in this field, you know, obviously with all that going on, the battle... what they did, they displaced a lot of the surface soil and moved things around. And actually, all these poppies started blooming, you know, the next following year. So, you know, the poppy seed can lay dormant for a number of years, but very interesting to say the least. So that's why the poppy is symbolic of remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
And the poem is really, it's a great poem. But I thought there's such cool history.
Sure. I didn't know anything about it. I knew about the poppy seed being the remembrance.
But mm-hmm.
here's the poem that Tony was talking about. In Flanders fields, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow. Loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you, from failing hands, we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high if ye break faith with us who die. We shall not sleep through poppies grow in Flanders fields.
Well done. Yeah, a poem written by John McCrae. He was a Canadian, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
But that's where the poppy really gained its popularity, you know.
And a lot of times they do that too with fundraisers for military services and for officers' clubs and stuff like that.
But in the grand scheme of things, guys, we're trying to get you, encourage you, entice you to buy flowers for your significant other for the upcoming Valentine's Day next Tuesday, and beware. When you send colored roses or really any particular type of flower, you are saying something.
Mm-hmm.
So watch what you say and don't scare her off. Right?
Yeah,
have you ever had somebody like just, it was like, oh, come on, get away. It's too much.
Mm-hmm.
Not you. You never had that problem, did you?
Lisa and I have been together for so long, I can't remember.
Just a word of caution. But, you know, and just to sum it up, get with your local florist here in the tri-state area because they are the professionals. You're going to get a quality product, great service, and you're going to be supporting your local businesses here. And on average, 68 cents of every dollar that's spent locally stays local. So support your local florist. And I'm not just saying that because we have a florist. We also are a garden center. But, you know, support your local businesses, and you're going to get the best product from your local florist. And call them up. Send Flowers Tuesday to your significant other for Valentine's Day.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we'll talk about a couple of things going on at your locally owned, independently operated garden centers. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, covering a lot of ground today, talking about flowers, the language of flowers, and the symbolic reasons or that you may send a certain color or roses for Valentine's Day. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to have Molly Wellman come in and talk about some great cocktail ideas.
Oh, I can't wait.
For Valentine's Day. And for any other social gathering, you know, we're moving toward the spring. There will be a lot of graduation parties. There will be a lot of wedding receptions and a lot of gatherings at your house. And maybe you want to do something a little special. And we've got the expert coming up.
Oh, definitely. And if you don't know Molly Wellman, she's renowned here in the Cincinnati area. She's a co-owner of several bars, Japs, to name just a couple, Myrtle's Punch House. And also, she's been voted best bartender in Cincinnati many times. And she's been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Cincinnati Enquirer. Mm-hmm. Also, you might catch her on a new Cincinnati Bell commercial here that you'll see airing locally. And also the author of a book that I was given over the Christmas holiday season. And that's why that I had to reach out to Molly and invite her on to talk about her book, Handcrafted Cocktails. And we made a little road trip down there last Thursday mm-hmm. and had a great time and enjoyed some different libations. And we're going to talk about those when Molly joins us here at the top of the hour. So hang in there with us. Yes. It's going to be a great, great last hour of the show.
And I wanted to ask you, since we're quickly approaching the busy season for everybody, what's going on at the garden centers?
At the garden centers, we're all getting in the new spring merchandise is what it is. And we're just, we're anxious. We're excitingly going through all the new stuff and putting it out. All the seed packets have arrived and your seed starting kits. Soils are arriving, the new pottery is arriving, and it won't be long. I mean, especially with the way the weather has been, you're going to start seeing some color here very shortly. I was talking with my friend the other day, Ron Robin.
Oh, yeah.
He was telling me some of his pansies are starting to crack and show a little bit of color. And really, just in a couple more weeks, once we hit March, we're all just chomping at the bit, ready to get some color in our window boxes, our pots, our containers out front. And pansies are one of the best things that you can do it with because they can tolerate some of the cooler temperatures that I can assure you that we're still going to see as we progress through the end of the winter months.
So this is the time where everyone starts to get geared up. A lot of people have cabin fever and ready to get out and get started.
Oh, you know, they are. There was someone in the store the other day. We're getting in a lot of our concrete products, our fountains, our bird baths, our benches, our statuary. And as a matter of fact, the other day, Ernie, someone was in. They're ready to look for a new fountain. So people are. They're ready to get outside. They're wanting to do yard work. They're wanting to get out into the landscape. And it's exciting to see people coming in, and they're wanting to get new ideas. This is also a great time for you to hook up with a landscape designer or somebody that does installations. Get it done. Don't put that off because what's going to happen, everybody gets up to that point of the year, that time of the year, it's graduation.
Yes.
And are wanting to have parties. And if your wife's not going to want you to do any painting inside, she's going to want you to do some work outside. She's going to want you to put out mulch or, you know, freshen up those landscape beds.
Sure.
And if you need somebody to come in and do some work, I'm sorry to tell you that it might be a little too late because those guys are already starting to do big jobs. So the sooner you get on it, the better it is.
And the thing that Bob Bard was talking about when he was here in your absence last week is
hardscapes are the first place to start. The best place to start, I should say. Because you want to get all of the hardscape stuff done first and then come back.
Right, exactly. I'm going to do a little hardscaping this spring myself, and I'm going to be hooking up with Margie at Bushelman Supply, one of our great show supporters, and she's already gotten in for me rock tread steps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take them down and the rest of the way into my yard, down to my fire pit area. So Bob's right. You know, hardscaping is a major element of landscape design. And try to use that, you know, use natural stone, use natural products because they don't look contrived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's mm-hmm. what I like about stone. It looks like it belongs. It, you know, when you plant plants along next to various styles of stone, it softens it. You know, it just brings that natural element out and sure. It's not contrived and it looks good.
Right. And don't forget about our friends, our birds, the bird seeds, the bird feeders, the bird fountains. You know, they still need to provide a place for them to grab a little quick drink once in a while.
Most definitely. And, you know, pick up some roosting boxes or bird houses, things like that. New bird feeders. If you need to replace some old bird feeders that are dirty or nasty, you know, it's important to keep those cleaned and still keep feeding the birds because we're still going to dip up and down with the temperatures. I know we've been relatively mild this winter, but we still need to take care of these little guys.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important as well. And even our good friend Denny the Birdman, he'll tell you that time in and time out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And what about the pollinators, too? Is it too soon to start planning for their activity? I mean, we have
no, it's never too soon to start planning. You know, if you're looking to establish, attract more bees to the garden,
right.
You know, start looking for those perennials and annuals that are bee attractors. You know, our pollinators are very, very important to have, and we need to protect our pollinators. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago, you know, because of the weather that we've been having. I forgot who it was that called and said she noticed a lot of bee activity around her bird feeder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, there's this representation, you know, out here in nature that, hey, it's time to wake up. It's time to start doing our thing. And the bees are getting the wrong information. What happens is there's not a source out there for those guys to make it. So, you know, they get kind of lost along their way, and you dip down into some really cold temperatures, it's not favorable to our pollinators. So there's a lot to be thinking about now, planning out those gardens for attracting bees, even butterflies. We were talking about the Asclepias. It was a couple weeks ago. That's the perennial plant of the year for 2017. And the monarch relies totally on the butterfly weed, the Asclepias tuberosa. You need it.
Yes, you do. Say that again.
Why?
Just the word, just the
plant. Asclepias. You know, some people will say Asclepias.
No, I love
say
the
Asclepias
way you,
tuberosa.
No. The way you said it was such a fact.
It's a fact, Jack. Just a fax, man. Yeah. Remember that? Dragnet?
Mm-hmm. 749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to touch base on seed starting. It's that time of the year where you need to start planning ahead and getting ready because when the opportunity comes to put them in the ground, you want to be on top of your game. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up in just about half an hour, we have Molly Wellman stopping in to share some great information about some cocktail drinks and some specialty drinks, not necessarily alcoholic. She has some great ideas, too, about stuff for special occasions, put you on top of your game. And also, we were talking about garden centers. Now's the time, a great weekend to go visit your locally owned, independently operated garden center. And especially if you're thinking about growing your own vegetables and stuff, seed starting is about to begin.
Yeah, you're right there, Ernie. That a lot of people enjoy and they get the gratification out of starting their own seeds indoors. And then when it comes time to take those outside and transplant, nothing more satisfying and gratifying than doing that on your own. And you also have the option, too, to just go to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up, you know, the individual plants and pots or cell packs, whatever it is that you want to grow for the upcoming season, be it, everyone loves the tomato, everyone loves vegetables, the cucumbers, the zucchini, herbs, especially when we talk to Molly when she comes in at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. I mean, she was using some great herb things in her drinks the other day, and that was really cool. And vegetables. She was using cucumbers. It was all good. You know, it all relates. It all comes together.
She had a nice little basket of all kinds of things that she used. It was
good stuff. Really good stuff. And, you know, when we talk about seed starting, something I really want to point out that's extremely, extremely important is do not start your seed too soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still a little too soon to do it because a lot of times when you start them early and you're inside, there's not as much light for that plant that it would naturally get outside. So what happens is they start to get spindly, lanky.
Uh-huh.
They'll lean towards the light. And a lot of times that has to do with your light source not being low over the plants as they start, over the seed as it starts to germinate and grow and develop. And doing so, you know, we're not doing anything good for this particular plant. So timing is of the essence. And just real quick, you can go out to johnnyseeds.com. It's a great source here. There's a seed calculator program built in based upon our last average frost date. In our area, it is May 15th. So you plug that date in, and it does all these calculations, and it tells you when to start your seed indoors and then when to start to plant those outdoors. A nice reference to have to do this. So just keep that in mind. And that's on johnnyseeds.com.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, just to, you're talking about seeds, we have Ron from Rising Sun on the line. He's got a grass seed question for you. Good morning, Ron. Thanks for hanging on.
I got a spot in my yard that the grass don't really grow. I got two big trees. One's a pine tree, and I'm not sure what the other one is, but it's real shaded there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, I was wondering what kind of grass seed I should try to put down there to get some grass to grow.
Well, most of your tall fescues will do relatively well in a shady environment. But keep this in mind that really there's not a grass seed out there that likes shade. There's not a turf out there that likes shade. There's just some that will tolerate it better than others. And university tests at Rutgers have proven that fescues do just as well in the shade as those other shade mixes that we typically see at various places. Now, the one thing that you just said to me, did you say there was a pine tree close by?
Mm-hmm.
Is it older? Has it been established for a while?
Yeah, I got a two-story house, and it's taller than my house.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, here's what else that comes into play in that particular situation is the pH level of the soil. Now, if it's really leaning towards the acidic side, which is what you will get over a period of years with an evergreen, a pine, that it, you ever notice weeds don't grow very well underneath pine trees?
Mm-hmm.
It's just because of that acidity level of the soil. You know, the older established pines makes it a little bit more difficult for things to get established because of the pH. So that could come into play as well, in addition to a lack of sun. So a lot of times limbing some of our older, more established trees up, meaning removing some of the lower branches, allows more light to come in through the side. But it's just one of those things, you know, with large trees, it's difficult to have enough sunlight for grass to, you know, progress. So okay. You might be fighting a couple of things there. What have you tried in the past?
I just got the house last summer, and I really didn't try a whole lot last year.
Okay.
You know, I just wasn't really sure where to start at with it. You know, I wanted to try to get something going this summer with it. But.
Right. Well, what I would do first is I would take a soil sample and be random about it. Just don't take one from one spot. Take several samples, and all you need to do is go down about 3 or 4 inches.
Okay.
Blend everything together and take it into your local extension office, or there are other companies that will do the soil sample for you. Indicate that you're wanting to grow turf, all right, and get that report first, and let's see where we need to go. Now, if we need to add any amendments to the soil, that will be indicated into that report, and that in itself will help us establish a lawn. But we also need to take into consideration the amount of light that gets to that area as well. So you got a couple of tasks ahead of you, but that's where I would start. And then I would look for a good type of tall fescue. I talk a lot about Fine Lawn Elite, and there's also a new version of that coming out this year called Fine Lawn H2O. Go to your local, what garden center is close to you?
McCabe's Greenhouse.
There you go. Wow. Stop over at McCabe's. See Scott. They sell a lot of those things, and talk with Scott, just as you described to me, the situation, and take it from there. Good people okay. over there.
Tell them we said hi.
Okay.
And then,
where would be the closest extension office for Indiana, do you know?
Well, I don't know that right offhand. I'll have to check into that for you and at one of our breaks, and we'll hang in there with us, and we'll see what we can find out for you. And if not, you know, ask Scott or ask Mike McCabe, and they'll steer you in the right direction. But that's where I would start.
Okay.
And, you know, follow up with us. Let us know how it goes. Even, you know, shoot us a photograph of that area, because I'm interested to see, like, you know, what that pine tree looks like and some of the other trees that are around that area. But, you know, that's the situation that's in front of you.
Okay.
Okay. And let us know.
All righty. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Sometimes it's tough.
Mm-hmm. And in some of those situations, too, if there's not enough adequate light to really get turf established and progressing along, what you can do is like, go to plan B and plant some ground covers or things that tolerate shade and turn it into something else. Maybe put a bench out there underneath those big trees or close by.
Sure.
A bird bath, you know, a shade garden. So sometimes, you know, it doesn't always have to be turf. It doesn't always have to be a lawn. You know, come up with some other alternative to that issue, and it'd be easier to take care of along the way.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Showers in the forecast. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about our yo-yo weather here in the tri-state and how it might be affecting your lawn and your landscaping. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, you know, the old saying, if you don't like the weather here in the tri-state, just wait a little while. It's going to change.
Or move.
Yeah. Weather is, we're expecting some showers for today and tomorrow. But a high temperature right around 60 today and tomorrow. Then down to 50 on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We'll see some sunshine on Monday, at least. It'll dry up for several days. But how is this yo-yo weather affecting your landscape plants, some of the bulbs that you have in ground? And I've seen a couple of things already poking up, some early looks that maybe could be crocuses.
Yeah, probably crocus. You're seeing some daffodils and so forth starting to poke their way up. Snowdrops. It's, you know.
And it seems awfully early for those.
A tad, yeah. I think so. You know, when you start having some of the warmer temperatures that we've been receiving, it starts to expedite things. It starts to make things progress quicker and come along. And then all of a sudden, you know, like we were talking about the magnolias, you know, how those beautiful buds start to just develop and just ever so slightly swell. And they're waiting for that perfect time to say, hey, I'm going to open up and give you this beautiful spring show.
Oh, it's my favorite.
But as those buds start to swell and start to develop and move along a little further, when you hit those extreme cold temperatures, those buds could be damaged to the point where they may never open.
I tell you what, I get so disappointed. And it's just this is sad because that great big beautiful magnolia tree, when it blooms, so fragrant, so beautiful, and then what will happen on occasions, bam, we get that freeze and they just wilt up and look ugly for a long time.
Well, you know what I did the other day, it was really stupid of me, and you know, I have a couple fig plants, and what I do, I take them, I grow them in a container, and I take them down into the, you know, the greenhouse, and I can put them off in a couple of the greenhouses that we supply very little heat to, and keep them, you know, safe, so to speak. Because, you know, the fig tree or the fig shrub itself, it can be a little temperamental sometimes. Back in the winter of 2012, a lot of them died back to the ground, but came back from its original root structure. But an extreme cold winter can be a little hard on the fig plant. So what I did the other day, you know, I play this game where I try to keep things cool and, you know, out of the sun and not under the glass where things heat up and things start to, you know, progress along and expedite and things start to open up and develop and put on new foliage. I moved them outside because it was a little cooler outside than it was in the greenhouse, and I forgot all about them. And then we dipped down into the teens the other night, and I was like, crap. And I, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night thinking about that.
And
I'm like, I didn't move those back inside.
It's too late then.
Well, I don't know. You know, that, so, you know, when I moved them into the greenhouse yesterday, you know, the pot was totally frozen, solid. And, you know, I'm looking at those buds thinking, you know, I wonder what's going to happen. So I'll find out sooner or later.
Yes.
I don't think it killed the plant, but I was just cringing. You know, I woke up in the middle of the night and I'm thinking, you know, I left those outside.
Now, the we always talk about mulching our landscaping and around our plants. And that serves as a little bit of a blanket for some of
us. It does. And, you know, contrary to what most people think, like when we mulch, it keeps the ground warm in the winter. It's the furthest from the truth. What it does, it helps keep that temperature, that soil surface temperature, constant. So when you get these warm-ups that you're talking about, you know, these fluctuations, the more often that occurs, it's that freezing and thawing of that root system of that plant that makes it tough on it as it winters over. So keeping the ground constant, you know, when you get those sunny days and the ground warms up underneath, the ground still might be frozen or cold. So you're preventing that warm up, those fluctuations.
Sure.
So, it serves a major purpose there.
Now, instinctively, there may be some people who see a few things poking up in their landscape bed and think, oh, I've got to protect this. I've got to cover them up. No. I've got to do something.
Let her go. That's the worst thing you can do. You know, do not do anything heroic. You know, Mother Nature's been around a lot longer than man and knows more about what's going on than we do.
According to some.
Well, there's nothing we can do. I mean, you can't hold back nature.
No.
And just let it go. Just it is what it is. And I don't like to use that phrase. But most certainly, just allow it to take its own course. That's so important.
I've been practicing for a while.
Yes.
Mother Nature and all the plants. And,
you know, we're talking about the nice weather we're going to have today and tomorrow. Certainly take advantage of it. And when I say take advantage of it, I mean go out into your and you don't have to do everything in one day. Just do things in like small projects. And before you know it, in a week's time or 2 weeks' time, you have a lot accomplished.
Sure.
But, you know, this weekend, I think I'm going to cut back my ornamental grasses. The weather's permitting, and I'm going to take advantage of it and not have to do it later.
Now, how far do you trim them back?
I'll take them down to about 4 inches, give or take. And if you have the ability to take that somewhere, you can cut it up or shred it up and put it in a compost bin, do so. Try to refrain from taking it to the curbside. It takes up valuable space in our landfills. So I always encourage people to try and take your yard waste and use it to some fashion or form to your benefit.
In the compost pile.
Compost pile, let it break down. Absolutely.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you take the time to join us on Facebook. Look us up and like us. And we're going to be talking about overseeding and dormant seeding in just a few minutes and retouch base on that. Plus, we also have Molly Wellman coming up in 10 minutes, going to be joining us. And we kind of still have a lot of ground to cover. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning, getting ready for Molly Wellman, who's going to be joining us here shortly. But it's time for In and Around the Table, or Around the Table. And you've cooked up another one, right?
Well, you know, I've been on this, I'm not going to say I'm on a healthy kick, but eating better? You know, just sometimes you don't have to always eat the best stuff all the time, but mix it up with some healthy things.
Sure.
And who doesn't like the sweet potato?
Oh.
Do you like sweet potatoes?
I do.
My wife loves sweet potatoes, mm-hmm. but an interesting little recipe here that mighty tasty, by the way.
Lay it on us.
It's a stuffed sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
And the part of this, the sweet potato, part of the stuffing is zucchini. Who doesn't like zucchini? I love zucchini on the grill, too. So it's one of those things that you can incorporate into the garden. You know, again,
right,
garden to table kind of deal. But and even interest. Sweet potatoes, if you want to grow sweet potatoes. Uh-huh. All right. So the stuffed sweet potato, start out with about 4 medium sweet potatoes. And you can microwave those if you want, 12 to 15 minutes. I always like to put them in the oven.
Sure.
I'm not a microwaving kind of guy, except when I'm heating up coffee. What about you? Do you like to use the microwave?
When I'm heating up coffee or whatever my wife Lisa have prepared for me to bring to lunch the next day. But don't ever nuke fish at their workplace in the microwave.
Oh, no. That's a
you
no
want to
go.
Talk about upsetting the apple cart, boy.
Mm-hmm. I can see that, too. Okay. Start out with like 4 medium sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to, part of the recipe is a tablespoon of olive oil, 1 medium zucchini, chopped, 1 cup of sliced yellow onion. You can use red onion. You can use white onion. Your choice. 1/4 teaspoon, give or take, of cayenne pepper. I always like a little heat. And this is interesting, too. Black beans in this recipe. Just a can of, a 15-ounce can of black beans, you know, drained, rinsed well.
Mm-hmm.
A teaspoon of kosher salt, you know, to your liking, whatever tastes good to you.
Heart medicine.
Well, that can get you some trouble. 1/2 teaspoon of ground pepper and 1/2 cup of shredded white cheddar. I love white cheddar. And Costco sells one of my favorite white cheddars from Tillamook Cheese Factory out in Oregon.
I love white cheddar.
I like white cheddar.
Mm-hmm.
So real simple. It's a real quick recipe. It's a very healthy recipe. And also, you're going to use sour cream, cilantro. We all like to grow cilantro. And lime wedges. Who doesn't like lime? Mm-hmm. We all like limes.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is heat the oil up in the skillet. Add our zucchini, our onion, our cayenne. Cook it until it's kind of browned, golden. And we're going to stir in the beans and salt and pepper for another 2 to 5 minutes to warm those up. And then when the sweet potatoes are ready, what we'll do, we'll slice it open lengthwise, move some of the center to the side, and stuff it with the mixture that we have. And we're going to add a little bit of sour cream and cilantro to it with a little lime over it. Very tasty. That was out of a real simple magazine recipe.
I was waiting for you to say, then we smother it in brown sugar and put it back.
And this recipe is on our Facebook page. And it's used, you know, just add it with a salad.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
something light. And, you know, I always like to get it on at the grill and make it happen at the grill. And it's been a little cold, so I've kind of been doing some things inside.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very tasty. And who doesn't like sweet potatoes?
We all do.
Mm-hmm. So that's around the table.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Molly Wellman, our guest, is here. So we need to take a few minutes and get her settled in, and we'll be right back to talk about some holiday Valentine's Day cocktails and some party favors you need to know about. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering an awful lot of ground, getting you ready for Valentine's Day with the language of flowers and the importance of knowing the symbolic meaning behind the colors. And now we're going to turn toward entertaining your guests or surprising your significant other. And we have Molly Wellman with us, who's going to help us out with that. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning, Molly.
Good morning.
So was it hard to get up this morning? Did you work late last night? It's Friday night. It's the bar business.
Yes, exactly. Usually, you know, sometimes I work pretty late at night, but for last night, I got off early, and so I could be here today.
Oh, perfect. A good excuse to get off early, right?
I thought so. I'm like, you guys, I got to wake up early.
Well,
when I go in, you're going to be going home.
Nice. Well, you're quite renowned throughout the Cincinnati area. There's no doubt about it. And it was my first time the other night when we stopped down at Japs.
Yeah.
And I've not been in Japs for years. And
he was asked to leave that one evening.
No. I had the best time. I really did. You were so welcoming, and not only to Ernie and myself and Katie, but what I did notice that you're so bubbly and warm, and everybody that came in as you were mixing drinks, you took the time to look up and say, hello, how are you? What are you going to have? And I'll be right with you.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been doing this for a long time. So I always treat it as another house for me. And anybody who walks into the bar, I definitely want to make sure they're welcome. So if somebody walks into my house, I'm going to say hi.
At least.
And you did that. And that's the beauty of I was so impressed. And because a lot of times you'll go into places, they ignore you. They don't even acknowledge that you're there. And you made everybody feel so welcomed. And I've never had anybody just drum up a drink for me like you did.
Oh, well, I'm glad you liked it.
And I did. And we're going to talk about the PIMS. I love that PIMS number one.
Yep.
What you did for me. Because I was really inquisitive about it. And Ernie, what did you have?
It was a Russian guy, Romowski.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. We had the Mike Romanoff for you.
Romanoff. Yeah.
That's such a great drink. And all my vodka lovers love that drink. It's such a good drink.
Yep. And it had a fantastic story. That's what Tony was talking about a little bit there. You have stories behind all of the beverages that you serve. And it was fascinating to watch.
I'm glad you liked it. I love stories.
I want to talk a little bit, too, about a couple of things. Valentine's Day is coming up.
Yes. I'm excited.
And, beverages at some point were considered to be aphrodisiacs and to help along the way. And I'm certain you have some expertise there.
You know what, Tony? They still work. They really, I'm sorry, not Tony, Ernie, I'm sorry. It still works as an aphrodisiac. It's amazing.
Sure. So if you were to whip up a Valentine drink, what might it be?
Well, you know what? I love champagne, especially I love champagne anytime. I really do. It's one of my favorite drinks besides bourbon. But I love to whip that up during Valentine's Day and to put a little spin on it as well. There's a great drink. I think I made this for Katie. I made a French 75 for her, which was a champagne cocktail.
Yep.
And
I did see that.
Yep. And I like to use that. Usually that's with cognac or gin. A lot of people use gin, champagne, a little lemon juice, and a sugar cube. Real simple, real good. And I like to put a spin on that sometimes. Like maybe instead of a sugar cube, use a flavored simple syrup that I'll make myself, maybe like with like lavender or like rose, and put a little spin on it to make it a little more Valentine's Day, especially the rose. I like to use a lot of rose water.
So that's that floral element that you were talking about. So all this stuff, Ernie, relates. You know, when we talk about drinks, all of our drinks have come from plants.
Yeah.
And then the things we accent those with, they're plants, they're herbs, and even the, what was the drink that you made for Katie where you muddled up the cucumber?
Oh, cucumber, yeah, the Kitty Burke.
Oh, that was, when you were muddling up the cucumber with the mint?
Yeah.
I could smell that like nobody's business. It made you want that drink.
Well, you know, I'm really particular about using fresh ingredients. So the fresher, the better. And everything that I make throughout my whole company is fresh. It really is. I went to school for nutrition and I learned what was all the crap that was in stuff.
Wow.
And so when I got into this, I noticed it was all like apple puckers and, you know, the Kuiper stuff and some of it's good. I don't want to put Kuiper down. They're great. But I don't like the artificial flavors. You know, I can really taste those things and you can taste them in a drink, and no chef at a quality restaurant would ever use something that was just artificially flavored.
They seem a little syrupy at times.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Oh yeah. No. And you can taste that. But if you use the real thing, the fresh thing, and you make things from scratch, it really comes through just like any chef would. So, yeah.
And we noticed, too, that you will use stuff like orange peels.
Oh, yeah.
And different things in beverages that a lot of people just don't take into consideration.
Well, the orange peel is really important. When I think I made, for you, Tony, I made you an old fashioned.
You did.
And a lot of people will make an old fashioned and they'll take cherries and orange slices and lots of sugar, and they'll put it in there and they'll smush the heck out of it, right? Well, no, I don't like to do that. I don't want a fruit salad for an old fashioned. Mm-hmm. I really want you to taste the bourbon. We have really good bourbon. We do not need to cover it up anymore.
Agreed.
So,
and you saying that, you made me a believer because I'm that person you were talking about. You know, I was talking about those Luxardo cherries.
Yeah, they're really.
And I'm muddling up the inner part of an orange and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, it's just I got all this stuff floating around.
Right. Well, you know, in the old days, during Prohibition,
uh-huh.
when, you know, you were getting whiskey from somebody who made it in their basement and then cut, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe it was good whiskey and it was cut with, you know, some, you know, garage, you know, distilled something.
Rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, pretty much. It could have been anything. It was really harsh. And so to get past that, you just had to add more flavor to it. So adding the orange and the cherry and the sugar, that made it so it was palatable, you mm-hmm. know? But now we have this beautiful whiskey. We do not need to cover it up. In fact, it's important just to enhance different parts of it. So just adding like one sugar cube, and then I use a, you know, the zest of an orange, like you were talking mm-hmm. about, and kind of bring out those flavors in the whiskey just using these little things. And the bitters, of course, kind of balance that and bring it all together. It's a really beautiful thing.
You just hit the nail on the head. You convey to me balance.
Yeah, balance.
And it had it. And you even told me you're going to just taste just the smallest element of that sugar
yeah.
with that each drink. And it was exactly that. It really was. You made me a believer. I'm not just saying that because I'm the one that was muddling this thing up. And I take pride. If I get into a drink, I want to master it. You know, I like Bloody Marys.
Yeah.
And I've been working on this old fashioned, and I've had so many different old fashions, and it's like finding that best balanced old fashioned.
Oh.
And I think you might have brought me to it.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Molly Wellman with us. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about refreshments and Valentine's and a couple of other specialty drinks for you. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Molly Wellman in with us, and constantly we talk about people hosting parties and always having a chance to gather some friends and families together. And we're going to give you a chance to, I guess, get a little education on some really nice beverages to serve up. And I mentioned this to you when we were there the other night. I love how you have brought nostalgia back to that part of our social life.
Thank you.
You know, it's just really encouraging for me.
I think it's really important. I think, you know, when you, the whole custom of going out to have a drink has gotten kind of lost.
Mm-hmm.
And not lost. I'm trying to bring that back. I always say I'm trying to make it safe to drink in Cincinnati again.
It may have gotten started to deteriorate with the drink and drown method we went through for a long time, and that's not the case.
No, you know? I had a part in the bar. It was called the Annex last year, actually, is when I closed it, where I would see, you know, these young college kids, and they're coming in and they're doing all these shots. And I never can understand why anybody would want to do a shot with somebody. It's just a downhill experience. And, you know, they fall off their bar stool and they just completely make an idiot out of themselves. And I'm like,
Is that when you got asked to leave, Tony?
No.
That's a joke. No, well,
yeah, that's a joke.
Not at Japs, but maybe somewhere else.
I mean, we've all been there. We all have. But there's a time and a place, and I've wanted to create this place where you come in and it's a social event. I'm very particular about my bars not having TVs in them. I don't like that.
We noticed that.
And that was the first thing you mentioned in your book.
Yeah.
And it drew me in. And you're right on.
It's really important. I mean, we live in so much, such a technological world, and constantly have things flashing in our face. And mm-hmm. if it's not flashing in our face, it's like an ad somewhere, you know, conspicuously put somewhere. Sure. And I wanted to not have any of that in the bar either. I really wanted a comfortable place where people would come in and talk face to face and enjoy a cocktail that not only tastes great and is well put together, but has some kind of story behind it. So you have more of an experience rather than I'm just going to drink this drink and then I'm going to get out of here. You know?
Four or five more.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want that. I really wanted a place where people could relax and bring back kind of that social element of drinking. You know, that's really important. And so you have a good day the next day, too.
I liked what you said when you made the first drink for me. I was asking about the PIMS number one.
Yeah.
And you said, this is a good afternoon drink. It will help you stay around a little longer because it's not as potent, but yet keeps you in the game.
Exactly.
I like that.
Well, PIMS is great. It's this, if you've not heard of PIMS, it is this kind of cup is what we call it. Mm. And this used to be a very popular thing back, you know, back in the day where you wouldn't get quality liquor, or you wouldn't get bottles of liquor that were already put together for a consistent product. You would go down to the dock and you would get a barrel of or two of gin, and they would not taste the same. And so you would have to mix them together and then add kind of your own recipe of spices and juices and, you know, different components to make a consistent product for your guests. So this guy Pims in London had this oyster restaurant, and he wanted to make a consistent product for his customers. And so he came up with Pims, mixing gin and his secret recipe of spices and herbs and juices and whatnot, and would mix it with lemonade or ginger ale. And you could drink it in the afternoon and then go back to work.
I thought it was very refreshing.
Good. I'm glad you liked it.
I did. I enjoyed it.
I love PIMS. It's wonderful.
Tell us a little bit about your book.
Oh, my book. Yes. So I wrote a book. It's really funny for me to think that ever was ever an author.
Yeah. But, although there is that thing where bartenders could tell so many stories.
Yes. Oh my God. I've seen it all, really.
Sure.
But this book, I'm a terrible speller, and I have this horrible thing with punctuation. If you ever follow me on Facebook, I'm sorry for all the people who love grammar. I really
am. You're not lonely there, sister.
I'm just really bad at it, but I can make drinks, so I think I'm forgiven.
Sure.
But I wrote this book, and they, you know, the publisher came to me and they said, we want you to write this. And I said, I'm terrible at spelling. And they're like, we have people for that. And I'm like, all right, let's go. And so it's called Handcrafted Cocktails, a mixologist guide for drinks for morning, noon, and night. And I really believe, I mean, you drink during the day, you know, you don't just wait for 5 o'clock.
Sure.
That saying it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Mm. It really is,
sure.
You know, it really does. But this drink, I mean, this book, is categorized in drinks that you would drink in the morning. Say if you were going to brunch, or you were throwing a brunch at your house. Or if you, in the afternoon, you were, you know, at an afternoon wedding or a party or something like that, sure. What would you would drink in the, and then before dinner, during dinner, after dinner, you know, stuff, drinks like that. So half of them are classics and they have stories behind them. And half of them are my own concoctions that I've been inspired to make through studying all these old cocktails. So.
Yeah, for instance, on Valentine's Day, a couple, a gentleman wanted to pick up his wife, his girlfriend. And let's just create a little scenario, came to one of your establishments. And he wanted to surprise her or order something for her, which is a long lost art, you
yeah.
know. What would you suggest to someone like that? If you really wanted to make a special Valentine's evening, where would you start?
Well, if sometimes we have people who call in first and they mm-hmm. say, hey, I'm coming to surprise, you know, can you come up with something? The first question I'm going to ask is, well, what kind of liquor does she like? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to make sure that she's comfortable. If she's not into whiskey or she really loves whiskey, I want to know that so I can make something that she really likes. So first, that's the first question. And I think I did that. Hopefully when you came in, mm-hmm. I said, what do you like to drink? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your favorite liquor? Or what do you normally drink when you go into a bar? I just need to kind of get an idea so we can make something that's interesting, but to your taste. And then I find out, and if maybe she likes whiskey. Maybe mm-hmm. she does. So, I would kind of ask a few other questions just to kind of get an idea. And I'd probably make her, I like to make this drink called a Seelbach. Have you ever heard of the Seelbach?
No.
Well, Seelbach.
It's in your book.
It's in the book, yeah. And there's a hotel in Louisville called the Seelbach Hotel. It's like a beautiful classic hotel and was written about in The Great Gatsby and, you know, stuff like that. And then we have a councilman, Seelbach, here too. He was kind of roundabout related to the people down there when they had the hotel a long time ago. But the Seelbach is a mixture of Cointreau, which mm-hmm. is a triple sec and orange liqueur, bourbon, of course, and then two kinds of bitters, Peychaud bitters and Angostura bitters to balance everything. And then it's topped off with champagne. It's a beautiful drink. It really, really is. Yeah. A lot of people don't think of champagne and bourbon together, but it works. It works really well.
Sounds awesome.
It is.
So, go ahead, Aaron. How important are bitters to making these drinks special?
Bitters are very, very important. In fact, if I go into a bar and I don't see, you know, a bottle of Angostura bitters, I turn around and I walk out.
Or order beer.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't order beer. Actually, you'd be so surprised. Well, maybe not, but I carry a bottle of bitters in my purse.
So people carry napkins, mint, gum.
I carry bitters. That's how important it is. It really, really is.
And what are bitters? What are bitters and why are they important?
Okay, so bitters are, they're bitter. Mm-hmm. And when you taste them alone, you're like, oh, no, I don't know. Unless you're really into bitters. There's a lot of people who do like that taste. But these are kind of the thing that bring everything together. Think about if you bake. You know, if you're baking like a cake, you add a little salt, don't you? Yeah, mm-hmm. You add a salt. And that kind of brings everything together in that recipe. Well, bitters kind of do the same thing. So bitters are a very concentrated, bitter, aromatic flavor, really, enhancer. In the old days, it was used as a medicine, like mm-hmm. most alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Angostura was used for seasickness. And still today, if you have an upset stomach, soda and bitters, they work. They calm your stomach. Sure. It works really well. But they, when you add them to a drink, say something that is a bit too sour or has sweetness and you need to balance it or bring all the flavors together, you add a few dashes of bitters and it does that. It's wonderful. Changes the whole drink.
Well, you did that with my drink. So you were the sugar cube. That's where you were concentrating the bitters on the sugar cube.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Balance.
The Angostura.
That's right.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Molly Wellman in with us, and we're talking beverages. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Molly Wellman in joining us this morning. We're talking refreshments, and Tony is awestruck and has been. He's been wanting to have you on for years.
I really have, yeah, because I don't know if you... Do you know a friend of mine, Tim Beckelheimer?
I do know Tim. Yeah. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, he's a little bourbon guru.
A bourbon guy. Larry have a blog called Bourbon Guys, mm-hmm. and they're in OKBB all the time. I mean, I really should put a plaque up for them because they love OKBB. I hope I'm not getting them in trouble.
No.
Their wives are, I love their wives too, and they know where
they
are.
That's when I first heard about you, was through Tim.
Cool.
And I was like, you know, I'm kind of getting into some bourbons because I don't always want to fill up on beer. And they're like, oh, yeah, you should do this, you should do that. And I just have never gotten around to it until, like, this Christmas. Someone had given me this book. Kathy, that works with us at the Garden Center, this handcrafted cocktails book. And as I started into it, I'm like, yeah, this is awesome.
Thank you.
And I was like a little kid in a candy store the other night when we were visiting you at Japs. And I've even tried one of your simple syrups in here. I made some drinks for some friends on the street New Year's Day. The Noggin Cleanser.
Oh, the Noggin Cleanser.
So I thought, you know, we're getting out of the holidays. We might need to cleanse the old noggin.
That's a perfect drink for New Year's. I never thought about it, but that is a great drink for it. And it's so easy to make.
It was. I have never, all this stuff ties into herbs and spices and so forth. And the simple syrups, when you were talking about keeping it fresh, mm-hmm. it really made sense to me. And I took the cardamom seeds and did everything you said. And I mashed them up in a mortar and pestle bowl. And to me, now I don't know if the name cleanser came from this, the noggin, but when I smell the cardamom, it's like thick salve. But a lot of people say lemon.
Right, yeah.
But it was a different flavor. And the whole kitchen smelled like that.
I love cardamom. It's expensive, but it's so mm-hmm. worth it. It really is. Colonel D's uncle.
Yeah. Uncle D, Colonel D, yeah. Little D, Cousin D.
But no, Colonel D's at Finley Market is where I get all of my herbs and spices for everything that we do in Wellman Brands. And the cardamom there is just the best. It's so great. And making the noggin cleanser, doing research and trying to figure out. The hardest part about making drinks is naming them. It really is. And so I do research on what am I putting in here? What can we call this? And when I started reading about cardamom in ancient times, it was something that would help to clear the mind. It was for the brain.
Wow.
So it was like, perfect. We're going to call this the noggin cleanser.
I like it.
It's such a great drink. Gin and lime and cardamom syrup.
Exactly. Yep. And it was good. It was, yeah. Sometimes some things are, with a simple syrup, a little sweet for me, but is there a way to tone it down?
Yeah.
So
when you make simple syrup, I always do one to one. So one cup of sugar, one cup of water, and then whatever you're going to put in. So the cardamom you would put in there. But it's about measuring when you're making the drink.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tool that we use at the bar called a jigger. And it's this little measuring cup on two sides, you know, stacked on each side. And measuring is the most important thing. It's like baking. You want a balanced, consistent product. So measure it. I know there's a lot of bartenders like, oh, no, I count.
I am so good
at counting. I've been bartending for 20 years. And the only time I free pour is if I'm making a two-part drink, like a vodka or gin and tonic or something, you know. But if I'm making a well-crafted cocktail, I want each component to be balanced. I don't want it to be too sweet. I don't want it to be too sour. I don't want it to be too strong. And God forbid, I don't want it to be too weak, you know? That jigger is a very important tool to making a balanced drink. So that's my advice.
I can tone it down by just lessening that amount.
Exactly.
Okay. Not with the original recipe.
No, with the original recipe.
Or like I was thinking, could you do a cup of water and a half a cup of sugar and the cardamom? Or would that
distort it? You could do that. But, you know, I always, again, consistency within my business.
Mm-hmm.
I've always gone with that template of one part, just so I know. Because I know how sweet it's going to be. And if I needed to make it less sweet, I just use a quarter ounce instead of a half ounce.
Now, you will also make a lavender
syrup. Yeah.
I've never had that. And you said you do a rose
syrup. Yeah. I've made rose water too, but it's such a pain in the butt to do.
Love that.
The other day, you made a drink for me that called for a ginger syrup that was very good. What drink was that?
I made this for you. I made the Ginger Rogers for you, the beer cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I put ginger in your Pimm's cup.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was in you're right. It was with the soda.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was, like you said, you used the ginger ale or the ginger beer.
Exactly.
Perfect.
So ginger beer is fermented and ginger ale is where I just take a syrup and then soda water.
You know, we were talking about how hard it is to name a drink. You did a couple of things that caught our attention too by coming up with or mentioning names like Sally Burke.
Kitty Burke.
Kitty Burke.
Yeah.
Tell us that story first.
So Kitty Burke, I made this. I love to read about Cincinnati history.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love it. It's so neat to see how far we've come and where we come from.
Isn't it though?
Yeah,
I
really
love that.
Is. I do too. Yep. I love it so much. So there was actually this woman who lived in the 1930s in Cincinnati. Her name was Kitty Burke, and she was a burlesque dancer. We had so many burlesque houses around downtown Cincinnati. We liked to party back in the day.
Yes, we did.
We really did. And Kitty was a very talented burlesque dancer, but she was also a tomboy, and she loved to go and watch the Red Stockings play at Crosley Field.
Mm-hmm.
So one July day in 1935, she's at Crosley Field, and the Red Stockings, you know, or Cincinnati Reds, are screwing it up left and right. Guy cannot hit the ball to save his life. She gets so frustrated that she marches down in her flowy little dress, you know, and takes the bat and starts hitting the ball. Here's how you hit the ball, you know. This is how you do it. God, that would never be able to happen today. But back then, she's known as the only woman who's hit in a Major League Baseball game. It didn't count because she wasn't on the roster, but they did give her a jersey, a Reds jersey, and she used it in her shows the rest of her time as a burlesque dancer.
And what's the drink like?
So the drink is really light. It had to be a summer drink, you know, very light. And anybody who comes in and says, I like vodka tonics or I like, you know, gin and sodas, I asked them if I could try the Kitty Burke out on them. Mm-hmm. I've never had anybody give it back to me, which is nice. But I muddle cucumber and mint and then a little bit of orange blossom water, which you just need a little bit. You just need a little bit because it's very strong. Mm-hmm. And then just 2 bar spoons of triple sec just to kind of balance all of that. And then gin. And then I top it with soda water. And it's a beautiful light drink. It really, really is. And even if you're a vodka drinker, this you can drink this. Even if you're like, oh, I don't drink gin. Sure. Trust me. Just try it. I promise I won't hurt you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We have Molly Wellman in, and we're talking about refreshments. And you know, we're trying to get you ready for a lot of the parties you'll be throwing for graduation, weddings, just house parties. And this is a great way for conversation starters, because everybody makes their way into a kitchen and a house.
Oh, they always do.
You know, yeah. And if you can throw some of these out there, and it's great to talk about those things. And we're going to come back and talk a little more about your book and a couple of places that you own. And we need to pause for the moment. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have our friend Molly Wellman in, and we're talking about some refreshment and handcrafted cocktails.
And the book in particular, which I love this book. And there's Thank so much you. In here I want to try. And we were just talking about martinis a second ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, you always hear the argument, was the gin martini the first or was it the vodka martini? And then we start talking about Smirnoff and
yeah.
how that gentleman sold all the equipment before vodka became
Yeah, he had no idea.
Right.
He had no idea.
not at all. He missed the boat.
But in the 1930s, no one, unless you were from Eastern Europe, you didn't drink vodka. You know, no, they were like, tasteless, colorless. I want to have some flavor in my drink, you know? Like, I want to taste it. Sure. So it was really hard to sell vodka. Now, it's hard to sell anything but vodka sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, tell us a story about the Romanoff cocktail, because okay. that's a great story, too.
And this goes along with the whole thing of vodka. You know, when I study old cocktails, it's about cocktails that were from 100 years ago. And people are like, can you make me an old cocktail with vodka in it? Okay, I have to go to the 1950s for this. So mm-hmm. the 1950s, the Mike Romanoff, there was this guy, Mike Romanoff, and he was this orphan, came from Eastern Europe. And his name was definitely not Romanoff when he came to the United States. He definitely made that up. But he ran around New York, and then after the 1920s, he moved to L.A., and started hobnobbing with the rich and famous, and started telling everybody that he was the nephew of the Tsar of Russia, you know, the Romanoff, the great Romanoff family.
Nice.
And he borrowed all kinds of money and probably stayed in some really flashy mansions, you know, with that little story.
Sure.
But apparently in California, you can pretty much get away with anything. And he used it to his advantage. Well, he ended up opening a restaurant out in L.A. called Romanoff's in the 1950s. And it was kind of like the Spagos or the Jeff Rubies of, you know, the 1950s in L.A. And he had a signature drink that, of course, used vodka because he was from Eastern Europe. And I made it for you, Ernie.
Yes.
And I think you liked it because you finished it.
Very tasty.
But it was vodka. A little apricot liqueur. I can't talk this morning. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And then this aperitif called Le Lait, which is this French aperitif. It's almost like a vermouth, but it's aromatized with orange and quinine. And it's a really beautiful, beautiful thing. And then just a little lemon juice. It's really, really good.
It was.
Really is good. And it's a classic. And I haven't had anybody throw it back at me, so it must be doing okay.
No, Ernie liked it. He enjoyed it. So is quinine in tonic water?
Yes, it is.
So
yes.
is it true that quinine is good with, like, muscle cramps? Or is that...
Well, it was originally used for malaria. It's what got the sailors, you know, any sailor on a boat, if you were going to a tropical island, it was like, it was more valuable than gold to have,
sure.
you had your ration of quinine, mm-hmm. you had your, you know, your lime juice for scurvy, and then you would get a ration of either rum or gin, depending on where you were. If you were a sailor, you were drinking rum, and if you were an officer, you were drinking gin. But you got that. And, you know, they had that custom of rationing up until 1970 on boats,
oh,
if you
really?
Were in the Navy. Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Huh.
And that's where you told me, well, Ernie, we were talking about that one day, the term limey comes from.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the gin and tonic really kind of came about because of these daily rations that sailors would have. And officers, they would drink Plymouth gin and with their lime, and the quinine's very bitter, so you add sugar to it, and you kind of have quinine. I mean, you kind of have tonic water that
Presto.
Way.
Presto. Change
yeah.
it.
I know. Amazing.
So where can people order your book from?
You can get my book anywhere. Barnes & Noble and Joseph Beth, but also Amazon.com and anywhere online has it. So, or you can stop into one of my bars. And if you find me, I'll sign it for you.
Awesome.
I may have you sign mine.
Tell us the ones you own. What do you own? Which one are you involved in?
Wellman Brands. I own Japs, of course. Mm-hmm. Myrtle's Punch House, which is up there in East Walnut Hills. We do punch.
Yeah.
Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, which is over in Northern Kentucky in the Main Strauss District. Neons, which I'm in the process of moving right now. Don't ask me where, but you will see. Oh, it's great. It'll great. Be fun. Melt in Northside, which I'm in currently moving right now. We're doing construction. It'll be moved to the corner of Hamilton and Blue Rock. And then Bottle and Basket, which is located in OTR on 14th and Republic.
So I had to ask you about Neons. It's been a long time since I was at Neons. Do you still have some of that old Coney Island stuff back in the back, or is that still around?
When I took it over, that uh-huh. was 7 years ago when we took it over. Terry had already taken all of his stuff, and you know the Terry owns Terry's Turf Club out there in on I think it's River Road. It's mm-hmm, out mm-hmm. east, and all of his stuff came with him and kind of was put into that. So when I came, it was just, you know, this incredible courtyard. And, you know, there was, you know, we put some work into it, but really it was just this incredible courtyard. Mm-hmm. Now we have outgrown that courtyard and we are moving it to another place where we can expand some more on it and offer food year round and stuff like that.
I see. So, I just remember Neon from years ago. And
oh, yeah.
I would see some of the old, rides and different pieces from rides from old Coney Island. Mm-hmm. And you remember the old Rosedale Manor that was over there by the golf course, Ernie?
I do.
That was a big, like, I don't know if you would call it a keystone type of inscribed piece of stone mm-hmm. that came from the old Rosedale Manor. And I thought that stuff was really cool.
Yeah.
We'll be looking for that grand opening invitation.
Oh, my goodness, definitely. Don't you worry.
Well, just enjoying your time here. Thank you so much for getting up early. We know as a bar restaurant owner, it's a nightlife. Oh. And, you know, we know we ask you to go above and beyond.
Oh, gosh, it's been a pleasure, really. Yep. I've enjoyed this.
When you go out, do you ever find yourself, like, if you're on the other side as a patron, a customer, and you order a drink, what will you typically order?
When I go to a bar, I try to be really easy. Unless the bar is, you know, they advertise, they specialize in classic cocktails, and, mm-hmm. you know, that then I get really excited, and I'm like, oh, I can go there, and I don't have to explain how to do everything. This is wonderful. I can just go in and order, you know, a last word or, you know, a classic cocktail, and they'll know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But if I go into a regular bar, I just order usually bullet bourbon on the rocks or a Beefeater martini. I'm really simple that way. Unless you say you're a cocktail bar.
Yeah.
If you say you're a cocktail bar, I'm going to order a classic cocktail.
Well, you're critiquing. You're like, you find yourself in that mode, like, that's not quite right. It's not this. It's not that.
No, actually, I used to, my friends would make me sit with my back to the bar. So I went and sit there and be like, what are they doing? Did they put bitters in that drink? Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm used to like watching my own bartenders and making sure they're doing things right. But now, I just enjoy the craft, and there's so many great bartenders in this city that really enjoy what they do, and they are careful and they're particular about the way the drink's made, and I get really excited about that. So I enjoy watching it.
You know, what's great too is to go to some of these antique malls, and you can find some of the classic shakers and bar utensils that a generation has. That, wow, my grandfather used to have one of those, and you know, I don't need it, so you get rid of it. You can pick up some really great things.
I collect them. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
You know, it's been wonderful. One of the odd things long ago, 100 years ago in another lifetime, I was a bartender bouncer. And I remember, I was sitting here listening to you tell these stories. Some woman came in, an elderly lady, and asked for something called a pink squirrel. And it was
pink squirrel.
And you'll have to look that up. This was probably somewhere in the 70s, and it was, you know, that drink was probably 40 years old when she asked for it. I had no idea.
I'm totally going to look. Yeah. I don't know that one.
And it just threw me off, and I said, I have no idea, ma'am, but, you know, I'll get you a beer.
Yeah. Sure, you can get a beer.
fun stuff. So, and I don't mean to embarrass you here or share something that maybe you're not, but congratulations in order.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's fine. I'm getting married next Friday, so.
I overheard you say that at the at Japs when we were there the other night, that you're going to be taking off a little time and you were getting married.
I am so excited. I don't know if I'm more excited about the wedding on Friday and Saturday. We're having a big party for everyone. Or if I'm just excited to have 2 weeks off because I haven't had any time off in a while. Yeah. So I'm really excited, though. I'm like been permagrin, you know, for days.
Good. Well, just being away from work for a couple of weeks is really that's huge.
Congratulations.
Wait, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have our friend Molly Wellman in. We have to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to wrap some things up with her and get you ready for Valentine's Day and give you some sure tips that'll make it a little more enjoyable for the two of you. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've had our friend Molly Wellman in joining us, getting us ready for some the cocktail season. I should have said that. But Valentine's Day is coming up, and as well as graduation parties, weddings, and all sort of gatherings. And we talk a lot, Molly, about how people have worked hard over the years to create that additional living space to welcome their guests. And hosting home parties has really become more popular these days.
Definitely.
Or popular again. And you have identified a need for a lot of people to be able to serve something other than just beer and shots, as you mentioned.
Yes. I'm not a big fan of shots. I don't like them.
I had a chance to go to Scotland a couple of years ago, and they like their scotch with a little drop of water.
Oh, yeah. It opens it up.
I had no idea what that was about. And we got a chance to tour a couple of the distilleries. And I was, as I told you the other night, I'm a beer guy with the bland taste or bland palate. But they would get scotch, and all of them would ask for one ice cube. And they would drop it in and let it dissolve and then sip on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different method, you know, instead of throwing back shots. And I'll just share this one story. This, and I'm from Kentucky, so we're used to doing shots at beers. Last year, we were at an event, and a special event with a bunch of guys. And this friend said, I'm bringing up this 125-year-old bottle of bourbon. And I thought, well, that's great. So it's late in the evening, and he goes, I'm going to break it open. We're going to do a toast right now. So at the end of the toast, wham, I throw my back, and everyone else is taking little sips. And I thought, because this is 125-year-old bourbon, you're supposed to sip it. And I said, well, fill this up again. I'll sip it then.
No. I love that. You're not stupid. I like that.
No.
And actually, 125 years ago, bourbon was not that great. So you probably did it yourself a favor, shooting it back.
Glad to hear you say that. Because it didn't say, oh, no. I want some more right away.
Oh, no. Yeah. I've tasted some old whiskey before, and, you know, it doesn't go bad. It just was made different over 100 years ago.
Agreed. To give us, again, just to reset, Valentine's is coming up, and if you want to do something special, what would you recommend for, you know, we're encouraging everyone to go to the florists, to the garden centers and pick up flowers. And if you had to have a special, I guess, beverage.
So I would suggest if you want to make it light, again, I love champagne. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot of people like champagne, and it goes along with if no matter if you drink a lot or you don't drink hardly at all, it's a light way to do this. But make a simple syrup. It's called simple syrup for a reason. It's simple. It's just one part sugar, one part water, and then whatever you want to put into, to the simple syrup to flavor it. So I would make a simple syrup, maybe a raspberry simple syrup. This is something you could easily do. Go to the store, get a little, pint of fresh raspberries. Put one cup of sugar, one cup of water into a pan, and toss in those raspberries. You know, wash them first, and then put them into the pan. Bring it almost to a boil, and then take it off of the stove.
Okay.
Take it off of the stove. Don't put it in the refrigerator or anything. Do not put it in the refrigerator. Just let it cool to room temperature. On its own, it'll take about 45 minutes, and then bottle it. But then, when you're ready to enjoy, or you have guests over, or you have that special someone, pour some champagne into some glasses, and then just a little bit of raspberry syrup in there.
Nice.
It will make the most beautiful drink. It'll be perfect, and it won't put you over the. It'll get you in the mood, but won't put you over the edge.
I like
that's important.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
A pleasure. Thank you. And
yeah.
I've enjoyed your book so much, and I encourage everybody to get out and look for the handcrafted cocktails. Johnny bought one.
Thank you.
The morning we were talking about it, he definitely picked one up. Ernie, you might want to do that yourself and entertain some of your buddies.
Plan on it.
Get them off that beer diet.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll talk to you guys next week.